Hey, just wanted to remind you guys, if you'd like to support this show and help us keep it the best it can possibly be, hop on over to patreon.com/warners, where you can leave us a tip if you like, and perhaps get some cool exclusive material.
Hey, Warners, this is your warning that the following episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About went a bit rogue from the beginning. You know, one of those episodes where we started the show before we started the show, you know, we were recording and then things happened. So put on your big girl panties and buckle up for the ride with Rachel Pitts, Keith Walters, and yours truly, Gina Tremarco.
So loud. I'll just mute him. I mean, it's literally I could spit as far as he is from me right now.
Oh wow.
I knew it when he showed up, and he's very thorough.
He's very good looking.
I keep trying to figure out who I want to send him to because he's a real nice guy. Yeah. I actually sold him his house. He lived in Montana for the last couple of years. He decided to just fuck off and go snowboarding for a couple of years. Yeah. He sold his business previously and went out there and did that, and then he was tired of snow. And so I got to know him really well. He's just adorable and super nice and hardworking, and now I helped him build up as much clientele as possible, and now he's was just telling me he feels a little guilty because he's so busy right now.
With landscaping is the business to be in right now. Everywhere you go, that is one business that is just booming, and it can be really lucrative. And my neighborhood, my landscape guy, everybody's out landscaping. So it is the business to be in right now.
Well, and what he was being told by a lot of his clients is, oh, you better watch out because a lot of people lost their jobs and you'll have a lot of competition. But the truth is, if they didn't purchase all their gear, you can accomplish with a weed whacker and a push mower 1 yard, yeah, but you can't do the volume that you're going to want to do if you make money. And down here, I mean, there are hundreds of landscape companies, but there's just as many people that need their lawn done.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that are really inconsistent.
Yeah.
You know what? Hold on. Speaking of getting the lawn done, I want to segue that because this is a show about being sexy.
Yes.
And there's not enough landscapers out there for other things.
Okay, good point, because I had an experience yesterday.
There's some landscaping I need, and I don't know how much longer.
Yeah, so you know, the bear kitty here is really running behind on business.
Oh, so I'm thinking that estheticians, hair removal, and nails should be essential businesses. And I will be flat out. I mean, we've talked about my boobs on this show, so might as well talk about this too, but I never shave.
Talk about what? Our vaginas?
Yeah, yes. I never shave my bikini area because I hate to have razor burn there. So I always, always wax.
You should not shave if you wax.
That's right. So I've been sitting here not wanting to shave, but things were, Felix, I was talking to Felix and he's like, what are we? I said, it's not like 70s, but he's like, what is it, like sort of early 90s? And I said, yeah. So I went yesterday, first thing in the morning with my mask, I went to CVS and purchased a few hair removal things because I was like, I can't take it anymore. And I have to say, I had a really good experience with some Nair cream yesterday.
Wow. Well, that's a sensitive area to be using that in.
Well, I got the sensitive skin area, the bikini area, sensitive skin version.
You didn't go out and get the wax and the strips and the melting
point? I have done it.
So have I.
I've got my lip strip.
My esthetician always laughs at me because she can't believe that I used to do Brazilian myself, because there was a time right after Roxy was born where, like, you know, she's a little bit older, didn't have a lot of money, and I didn't know of a place that was less than like $80 mm-hmm. for a bikini wax for Brazilian. So I was like, I'll just do it myself. I'm tough. And let me tell you, it takes a strong person to do your own Brazilian. I actually did it multiple times, but it hurts getting a Brazilian, but like you don't know exactly when they're going to rip the wax. So you're just kind of, I just sit there and talk, da, da, da. But when you have to do it yourself, you're like, three, two, one.
Well, I've actually done it to back when I was married a long time ago for my ex, kind of the same situation, you know, saving money and everything.
You talked about this before, sugar wax.
Oh my gosh, you know, that was a great way to create disruption between.
you don't need to be doing that to your woman.
It was great if I was angry with her. It was like.
Yeah. And my husband at the time used to come in and, well, he did once try to come in and see what it was like to watch me, you know, do this Brazilian on myself. And he left pretty quickly because it was not very sexy. I'm like sprawled out with my leg up like.
I did go out and buy strips for my lip and bikini area. And I almost called you, Rachel. I'm like, you could find a good friend to do this.
I would just totally do it, but
spread my legs and you do it for me.
I would wear my mask if you wouldn't take offense to it, but I would do it. And I would wear my mask just because I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that. Put my face.
My vagina does not have the coronavirus. And welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About, a rogue episode. And today we are talking about staying sexy while staying sheltered. Hello, Rachel. Hello, Keith.
Yes.
Good morning, ladies.
We don't script this shit. It just happens.
Wow.
You know, so the week before we did the recording of this particular show, I was sick. I was actually worried that I had coronavirus. A little worried, concerned, let's call it, because I had symptoms that were reflective of what they say the symptoms are. So then I had the test. It was negative. All good. So, but it did take me about a week. So that was a week of like literally. I would shower, but definitely like just put my hair up, no makeup, just wearing my pajamas. And once I felt better, I was like, I've got to get myself back on putting makeup on, fixing my hair, putting myself together, because there's something like it brings my spirit down to look in the mirror at myself and just look like a little haggard. So I feel a lot better putting some makeup on this week.
And I want you to know that I did purposely do all of this.
Put on your negligee for us.
It is not a negligee. It's a shirt.
It's a negligee shirt.
But I have my pajamas.
She has her pajama pants on. I have pants and a belt. Real pants.
Well, I have a dress shirt hanging right back over here that I throw on.
Do you have pants on at all, Keith?
I have shorts on.
Okay.
But I have a dress shirt over here that's hanging. It's just like if I have a business Zoom, on goes my dress shirt, you know.
Can we see your shorts?
Can you see my shorts?
Yeah, model for us.
They're like shorts shorts. They're not boxer shorts.
They're shorts. They're shorts. Can't see.
They're shorty shorts.
Hold on.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God. No. It's
That was the best ever. We'll have to have that moment as a clip. I think that was possibly one of the best Zoom moments I've ever seen, where someone crotch shots the microphone.
That's the video that Doug's going to use.
I love it. I hope so. Please, Doug, do. But, you know, going back to our point just a second ago.
I think Keith's penis hit the microphone.
He definitely did.
I mean, it was only 2 feet away, so.
Okay, hold on. Let's gain some composure. So going back to
and
nice
for those
shorts,
of you just listening,
way,
all I did was a pull up. And
yes.
Not a pull out. Pull up.
Golly, oh Doug's going to have to edit out all his giggles. Okay, so hold on. Going back the other day, I did look on Facebook and saw a girl that was, it was sort of a rant. So I sometimes find these little, I'll give myself limited time on social media. And sometimes I like to look at people's rants for just a minute because they're funny. And this girl was bitching about the fact
So Rachel, you're having internet problems there, it appears. Someone's streaming porn in your house or something.
We need to tell Rachel she can't watch porn while we're trying to do a show.
All right, I got on my hotspot, so now it'll be my phone. My phone will start blowing up and interrupt everything.
She got on her hotspot.
It's only when we're recording a show that this fucking happens.
And the landscapers come.
Yeah, I was not watching porn, for the record. I'm really actually not into porn, like watching it. I'd much rather make it. So just to clear that up.
Okay.
So back to
young children.
So I was looking at this rant that this girl had on Facebook about the fact that she didn't want to, and I quote, waste good makeup putting on makeup for nobody. And I thought that was really odd because I actually, like, most of the reason that I get put together is for myself.
Well, you know, that goes back to the show that we did with your boob doctor. Okay, what's his name?
Dr. White.
Dr. White. And, you know, and talking about how he interviews patients and, you know, he wants to have patients who are doing it, who are having a boob job for themselves, not for someone else. You know, it's about owning your own desires.
Yeah, and incidentally, Felix, my husband Felix, was really interested in what the discussion was about with Dr. White. So I was telling him all about it, and I told him that, Gina, you actually asked me twice, in case you don't recall, you asked the same question twice, of like, how did getting a boob job affect my business? And Felix started dying laughing. He's like, nobody gets a fucking boob job to improve their business unless they're a stripper. And I was like, true.
Yeah. But it can have a great side
really
effect.
It was really funny.
Well, I disagree with that. And I asked you twice because I didn't get the answer I wanted the first time. So that's why I asked you a second time.
And what answer did you want?
I wanted to know about how our physical looks impact how people treat us.
Ah.
And that affects your business.
Well, that's a different question, though.
Well, now, thank you for schooling me. I'll ask you here.
Sure.
How did getting a boob job change how people were treating you, which could have impacted your business?
To be honest, since the coronavirus has come around, I haven't been able to test it out that much, but I don't think, especially in the business that I'm in now, in mortgage, that it affects the way that people treat me at all, because most of the business I do is via email and over the phone, and most of the clients that I encounter didn't know me when I had a smaller bust. And most of the business that I get is from real estate agents. And most of the people that I work with are female real estate agents for the most part. So I don't think they care about my boobs. But I haven't fully tested it out yet. I mean, initially, that was part of the discussion, the lively, fun-loving discussion that Felix and I had about it. Is like, oh, hell yeah. I'll be like, everybody will want to be talking to me once I get my boobs done. And it'll, you know, but it was just more jokingly, I think. And I had this discussion, actually, with some of the girls at the theater last year when I was kind of pondering, was I going to do it or not? And one of the girls said that she used to live in Arizona, and she said all those girls out there in Arizona got their boobs done. Like, and she said, and she's a real pretty girl. She's a professional dancer at one of the local theaters. She said when she went into a party with one of her friends that just got her boobs done, she said, I might as well have been invisible. And, you know, she's a beautiful girl, but she's like, I mean, people just are attracted more to that. And I don't know. I guess I'm more attracted to me.
Yeah. So Rachel, does it make you feel more sexy?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I was thinking this morning, cause I was like, after I worked out and took my clothes off before I went to take a shower. And then I like got distracted and did some dishes and cleaned off the stove. And I was like, I wonder, you know, I should just be naked all the time cleaning, just cause then I catch a glimpse of the mirror and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that goes to the comment you're telling about this girl not wanting to waste her makeup, but wow, that says something, because isn't it, don't you do it to make yourself feel sexier? And during this, isn't there a reason to feel sexy even if you're by yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
100%. Yeah. I always feel way different when I'm put together. Like, I was on calls yesterday, and yesterday I did not put any makeup on. And I was like, I was so self-conscious about it. And not that I feel ugly, but I'm like, I just feel better when I'm put together.
Right. There's a certain thing, and I think for women, and men must have certain routines like shaving, you know, if you don't shave for a while, where you catch that look at yourself in the mirror and you just don't, like, that's how I feel when I don't wear makeup. I don't think that I'm an unattractive girl. I know that I'm a beautiful girl thanks to great genetics and taking care of myself. But I know that I know after 44 years of practicing how to add that little extra of makeup to make my eyes a little more enhanced. And then when I'm wearing lipstick and do my eyebrows, then it makes a difference to me. I don't know if it makes a big difference to other people. Like Felix, when I first met him and the first time I spent the night at his house and took off my makeup, he's like, "Oh damn, are you wearing makeup?"
Yeah.
Because if I'm daytime makeup, I don't put a lot of it on, but I put enough that it enhances my strong points. And I was actually glad when he said that, because that means I wasn't overdoing it.
Yeah,
but it was genuine. He wasn't like trying to pander to me. He was like, "Oh, I didn't know you had any makeup on."
Yeah. You know, I've made the comment before that guys care less about makeup on women than women care about makeup on women. So
for sure.
Yeah, Keith has had that.
For sure. And I bet there's a lot of men out there, I'm just guessing, that some men have this woman who wears way too much makeup and tries way too hard, but he ain't going to say anything, because if he says something, then she ain't going to give him what he wants. So he just keeps his fucking mouth shut.
Smart guy.
That's right. Oh, you look great, baby. You look great.
Yeah, for guys, shaving and haircut, I'm about to drive, this is like about to drive me up a wall not having a haircut for the last 2 months.
Ooh, let's talk about hair.
Yeah, let's talk about the guys and hair, because I've had
hair on the vagina
we're
moving up now. Okay, we're moving
up in the world.
Yeah, yeah. We've covered the vagina thing. I mean, I just wish, to Rachel's point, it should be essential. They should be open. I should be able to go do that. Sort of bullshit I can't.
Well, this is a learning for me. My nail tech, the last chick I went to, she said that she does nails out of her home, and I didn't get her phone number. And my esthetician, I could probably go and get to go to her house. And after this, I'm going to make sure I have people's personal phone numbers.
I got a nail guy. I got an underground nail guy. I was going to invite you last week to the underground nail party, but you were waiting for test results. So I wasn't really feeling safe to invite you over. And so I didn't tell you about it. But I mean, I'm back. My nails.
Okay, that's a side conversation we'll have after this.
Okay, sure. But I can hook you up. I got a guy.
Wow. Underground nail party. A whole new business.
You want boyfriend? Yeah. You got to have a nail, gel nail.
Yeah. And they do wax, but not bikini wax.
Probably, for the right price, he probably would have.
I asked, he came with his wife, and I go, "Do you do bikini wax?" She's like, "Oh, no."
She's like, "No, he doesn't."
I try.
So, Gina, what else are you doing to stay sexy during this shelter at home time?
So I got my underground nail thing going, and I did have an underground hair visit to the back door of a certain salon.
I heard,
and it was so funny, because I didn't talk about it because I don't want to get her in trouble. She's so worried about getting in trouble, which is just ridiculous. I mean, not ridiculous that she's worried, just ridiculous that their livelihoods have been cut off. Like, she can't even resell product because the distributors will not sell product to them. So completely cutting off her income. And she's like, "I need grocery money." And I'm like, "Tell me where and when." It's literally made me go through the back door. She's like, "I will color. I will come with wet hair. I will trim you. I will color you. And you're on your way." And that's it. I'm like, done.
Does she wear a mask and gloves and everything?
Huh. She did all that. And she, this pouring rain when I had to leave. And I'm like, God, are you fucking kidding me? So she gave me a garbage bag to literally put over my head as I walked to the car with a garbage bag over my head. And I said, I hope I don't get pulled over by the police. And now I got to explain why I look like this. But my hairs did. My hairs did. And you know what? There are going to be people who are like, there are people dying of COVID. I get it. And I'm not trying to be cold about this. But we have jobs where appearances, I think, matter. And we're on video a lot. So to me, if I don't feel good, I can't present myself as well. And that affects my business. So I was getting my hair colored no matter what. So if she wasn't going to take me, I went and I picked up this little...
That's been a hot seller lately.
Okay. Oh, wait, it's such a hot seller. It's such a hot seller. Everybody who can't see this video, it's L'Oreal's Magic Root Cover Up, which thank you to my friend Eileen Patney. Shout out to her who suggested this for me when she saw my plea for help. And the red, I posted. I'm like, what do I do? She posted a picture. She said... Yes, she sent me a link on Amazon to get this L'Oreal Magic Root Cover Up. The red is the exact red of my hair. I don't know how that happened, but it did. And it temporarily colors your gray. She sent me the link. I bought it, and I bought many of them.
Ooh.
So that I can sell them, resell them on the black market.
Red market.
You thought... You thought toilet paper was in demand. This is next. This is what they're predicting.
It's crazy that you actually still cannot buy toilet paper. Like, I've been to the store a couple times and it's literally not there.
Hmm. Yeah, so we're, weird. We have it in ours. So it's been,
been good to see. That's because you're fancy.
Well, you know what? There's actually more availability of that stuff in like a Whole Food or something similar than there is in the standard Albertsons, Tom Thumb, like that. So,
well, and I'm just letting my roots grow. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be blonde and
yeah, it's different when you're blonde. Yeah,
so I'm just going for that ombre thing that people do where you see them and they kind of have it.
Yeah.
Like it's trendy in my opinion. And it's, I'm going for the Rapunzel thing. Like I'm good with it. It doesn't bother me. I don't feel bad about it at all. And then my nails, I came up with that trick. I thought it was pretty awesome. But you know what is funny?
I don't think Keith knows about so that. I thought it was really cool.
What I did was I was sitting there last week while I was ill and had a lot of time on my hands. And I've got some regrowth because I get acrylic and gel on my nails. So I've got maybe about a centimeter of regrowth right now. So I went and got this glitter nail polish that, of Roxy's and kind of filled in the bottom from the bottom up glitter. Because then there's this one that didn't get done because I had that horrible paper cut that went out of control. I got a paper cut between my nail and my skin from a box. So before all this COVID, I had this terrible paper cut that took like 3 weeks because my immune system's no good. So I had my nails done, and this one is silver because I didn't have it redone.
Are you flipping us off? You're flipping us off.
Yep. And then the other ones now have glitter that matches it. So it's kind of a thing. But I'm just kind of going with it because I know there's people out there that they're like trying to soak it off themselves. And I tried that once and it went horribly wrong. But
it's a nightmare.
But I will say that there are people out there who are actively selling, because when I posted that little video about coming up with my own creative solution, I had all these people come after me with these, I don't know what they're called, color somethings. Like, they're like stick on.
All the direct sellers.
They were direct sellers, and they were
They're vultures right now trying to sell stuff, and I like shoot them down.
Yeah.
So how's business going for you? I'm like, don't you even try.
Don't you wish you had a home business like I do?
Mm-hmm. I was like, bitch, bring it. Stop. I'm not selling nails, no, or any other direct. Nothing against direct sellers, but I need to do sales training with them. They need help.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a good thing. But see, the thing about, because I've done some direct sales companies in the past, and the thing about it is that they don't like to go outside of their little, let's use the word cult, because it's kind of what it is. They don't really necessarily like to go outside of their cult because they want to keep everybody in doing. So then they'll have somebody who was successful at like Facebook Messenger vomiting. So those people get on a weekly sales call and tell everybody what they do, and then all these people start doing it. So mm-hmm. I don't know how you would get into doing the sales for those people, but they certainly need it.
So Rachel, I have a question for you. Different area. You're of the three of us, you're the one with a permanent relationship. Cohabitating.
Oh,
I guess is the better way to say it.
What?
A cohabitating
what
relationship.
Are you talking about?
So how is all this time together impacted I don't know if you've talked to any of your friends or acquaintances in the same, you know, Gina, you too, like from a cohabitation perspective. How's this impacting yours and others?
I am still unorthodox when it comes to that, because Felix and I still have the two houses. And it's turkey season, so turkey season.
Well, that came from nowhere.
Well, in South Carolina, anybody who's a turkey hunter will understand what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because turkey hunters are busy during turkey season because it's only like a month. So he is all about, like, his focus since it's over next week. Since all of turkey season, he's been 100% work and turkeys. So he actually has still been going to the office. So he hasn't been home with me like all the time. And
Rachel is a turkey widow.
No, I am not a turkey widow, but I have a turkey hunter who gets up earlier than me now, which is crazy. And, but he has been going to the office. Most of his office is working from home, but he goes to the office. And he's been carrying on with a regular schedule the same way that I have. Mine has just been at home. So I haven't experienced what you're probably getting at, Keith, which is people that are kind of sick of their spouse or like having trouble with their children. I am experiencing a little bit of stress. I think that's the only thing causing me stress right now is the homeschooling thing, because I'm still working full time and then trying to get the schooling done. It is a challenge. Basically every time we do homework starts with about 30 minutes of crying and arguing. I'm not usually crying. And then we get down to it. It's just a resistance that I think is a lot of the parents are having that resistance. Now, some parents are out there telling me that they get their kids asses out of bed at like 7 a.m. and they start them at like 8 a.m. as if they're going to school. I don't roll with that shit because I have shit to do. And, I like my mornings. I have a really great morning routine. And so Roxy and I negotiate what time we're going to do homework. And normally it's like 5 o'clock because that way I can do my work day. And then from 5 to 7, we do homework. And that way she can do whatever the heck she wants, which consists of a lot of online talking with her friends. But it is definitely anyone who is working and trying to homeschool, it's very challenging. And I've also been teaching her empathy about the fact that these teachers, like her teachers, taught fifth grade for like 25 years. She's never had to deal with anything like this. She doesn't know. She's probably not as computer savvy as even Roxy is. So some of the shit's all fucked up and confusing. And I'm like, you know, we just have to be empathetic to the fact that this teacher probably is struggling as much as you are right now.
I don't know if you listened to the governor's press conference yesterday about the fact that school is now closed for the year.
Yeah, I knew that was going to happen. There was zero question that was going to happen.
Yeah, we predicted that, but there was definitely a lot of questions around, I don't know, I always do the claim, I'm not a parent. The fact that this pressure is put on parents to literally be teachers. And at one point, the governor said, I know in the beginning we sent too much work home in the beginning. You know, for parents to do. Yeah, that's right. They're not teachers.
And some of us are still working. Like, I'm going to avoid the issue of the fact that Roxy does have another parent who could be helping. But I am, this is what I have decided. And this also is a direct result of the Science of Well-Being course that I've been doing through that Yale professor. It's being offered by Coursera. It's a really great course that's free. And I've been doing, I do a session every morning of that course. And there was a session where this professor is talking to these Yale students about the fact that most students think that getting good grades is the focus they should have. But actually the data, the scientific data proves that the students who are more focused on actually learning the information are happier and perform better than the kids who are worried about the grades. So once I heard that, I was like, okay, then I'm going to take that as well. And we're not going to worry about grades. We're going to worry about, let's figure out, number one, how to navigate this situation so that we don't have to cry and argue. That's number one for me. And number two, let's figure out how to get the work done and learn something and enjoy having to pivot to learn in a different way. Because that, in my opinion, is what school is all about for me. School is about teaching a child how to approach work and get it done and try to improve themselves. Because, you know, a lot of the shit that we're, this common core math shit is, oh God, you guys, they are not going to use that shit later because there's a calculator on your fucking iPhone. But you have to learn it and you have to get through it because that's how work is. Sometimes you have a task that you don't really feel is important or worth it or whatever, but you've got to learn how to do it and execute it to the best of your ability because that's your job. And that's just my approach. But it's definitely a challenge. And I think kids in the upper grades, like high schoolers, it's probably really tough. Plus those kids are so, they're so all about socialization at in high school, you know, it's probably tough.
I think a lot of us are into socialization. And getting back to Keith's original question, I'm currently not cohabitating. We'll leave it at that. And kind of, it kind of is a little lonely alone. Mm. In isolation. And people, I don't think people realize that when they're like, this stay at home, I'm like, fuck you. I'm here alone all fucking day. I mean, I've got the dogs, but even they get tired of talking to me. It's,
I think it has to do with, and then I are you introverted or extroverted? You know, and that's,
oh my God,
I am.
Last week, the folks being that are sick and,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the folks that I talk to, the ones who are measured as introverts, like using the culture index that we've talked about before, they're just so happy. And the folks who are measured as being extroverts, they're so miserable. Duh.
Right here. Yeah. And I, you know, I used to claim ambivert because I'm always on, but this has taught me that no, I guess I really am an introvert. Yeah. Because I really have learned, I mean, it has really taught me how important it is for me to have people around me, and I never realized how important that was.
So
that,
you mean you're an extrovert?
You're an extrovert. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm an extrovert because I'm an extrovert but when I have to do a lot of training or speaking, I need downtime. That doesn't take away from me being an extrovert. But I need people around me. Like, I literally think I started cooking so much to entice people to come over, which has worked really well.
By the way.
Like, I have become the Italian mama. People are like, do you have anything to eat?
What are you doing?
Can I come over? What's in the fridge? I'm like, come over.
See, I am totally the opposite. I am 100% solidified that I'm an introvert because last week I was legit not feeling well. So there's a few days that I lost because I was literally just sleeping and comatose. But then as the days went on last week and I was feeling better, but still laying really low because I was, you know, waiting for test results and just wanting to be smart. I loved being alone. Oh, it was like me and the dog. No fucking buddy bothering me. Although everybody was bothering me, like, how are you feeling? But I definitely did not hate it. And I do not hate not being in crowds. And I think that's also part of the reason that it's not bothering me is because I'm continuing to work and have my same purpose. Like, that hasn't been interrupted. But I know there's people, let's pretend like there's people that have always identified with leaving their house to go to work, like say a chef or somebody that's been a bartender in Myrtle Beach for 30 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That they're used to going out and doing their job in a location and they don't have income and they're waiting for the stupid unemployment to come through and they can't leave. I'm sure that must just really be hard for people.
And there's a lot of people who get energy, whose base energy comes from that interaction with other people. And that's hard. And I'm extremely introverted, but my number one language is physical touch. And so that's a real, you know, I don't like being around people all the time, but when I do, I like, you know, close contact and proximity. And it's hard.
Hey, Warners, are you having a great time listening to this episode? We know we are. Hey, if you want to connect with us directly, don't forget you can do that at our website, womenyourmotherwarnsyouabout.com. You can find Rachel, Keith, and myself there, along with all of our social media links, especially Keith, who you can only find on LinkedIn. But that's cool. And now back to the show.
So when you think about you, you touch my
Sorry.
That's great.
Well, imagine being an extrovert and having a love language of touch.
Yeah. Very frustrating.
Mine is touch and attention or time.
You know, quality those are time. My top two as well. So boom, you're not getting it.
Oh yeah, no. Don't touch me is where I come from.
I'm crawling the walls. I was like literally ready to walk over. Like, hello neighbor. Like,
will you just touch me?
I'm literally inviting myself over to people's places. Wow. I think I'm gonna end up getting myself in trouble.
like it's a stay at home order, woman.
Can I come over?
Just bring a lasagna and they'll let you in.
Can you just touch me? Hug me.
What about an underground restaurant, Gina's? Or G. Marie's.
You know, I had a conversation. This is interesting conversation. I had probably an hour long conversation with a woman that I know who lives up in Jersey. And New Jersey, New York, their scenario is vastly different than what we have here in the Myrtle Beach area. It is gnarly. Her next door neighbor is a doctor who works in the hospital. And one of her good friends is a mortician. And she gets real gnarly reports from these two individuals. And she said up in New York, and it could be fake news, but I would tend to believe that it could be real news, because there's people that are not working, and the cost of living in New York City and being trapped in a tiny little apartment and literally not allowed to leave to go anywhere. Not like in our area, you can go outside. I can go and walk 6 miles and not see a soul and be outside. In New York City, you can't go out and just walk around. And she said there's people jumping out of buildings already just because they can't take it.
Well, it's a big issue. And it's not just in New York. I mean, you know, there's been, I don't want to get into the relationship, but a 13-year-old here just committed suicide based on this disconnection issue. Yeah. And I think, you know, suicide's a huge issue to start with, you know, for youth and for, you know, and military. And this just exacerbates a lot of those issues around that.
You know, Keith, we talked via email about doing an episode on meditation.
Yeah.
And one of the things that came up, and this came up actually from Kathy Redwine, but then I saw it on the news as well, is that psychiatric help, people going for help, is up 891% compared to last year. I mean, that's insane that nobody is really talking about that piece of the pie of really how people are psychologically losing it.
Yeah, the fatigue related to this, and it's just going to get more and more fatigue related to this over the next, you know, few months. Who knows how that's going to, you know.
Yeah, when the financial stuff. So May 1st is going to be when people really start. So like April 1st, most people that I know, even ones that lost their job, were able to pay their rent, pay their car payment in the month of April. May 1st is when it's going to really start getting ugly.
Yep.
And the forbearance, all the people that went into forbearance are going to start showing up on the mortgage side. That's when people are going to be running out of money. And as far as I know, a lot more people have not received any stimulus money, have not been able to get unemployment to work, have not seen a lot of that stuff. So I think that's when we're going to start seeing that. Now, side note, just to be funny about something, to lighten it up, talk about meditation. So P. Diddy's got
I saw that on Netflix or
so on Audible.
On Audible.
I listened to a lot of Audible, and P. Diddy's got a meditation. It's free on Audible. So I was like, P. Diddy, all right. And he's got this picture and he's mugging it. He just looks like very diddish, if you will. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna try this thing. I gotta just test it out. But legit, so the one that's on there for free is here's the leaf blower now. It's Can you hear this?
That's okay. Go for it.
So
I need a leaf blower.
You need this leaf blower. He's super hot. Once you can get past the fact that it's Diddy, like for about 30 seconds, you're like, this is hilarious. It's P. Diddy. He actually, it's really good because he speaks in a really plain language. It's not this lofty, like, I am a meditation expert and you can feel the woo-woo. It's not that fucking bullshit. It's P. Diddy, man. But he legitimately walks you through a really great breathing exercise and the fact that you deserve to relax and you deserve to not worry about the rest of the day. It was good.
Well, that's great. That's great to know because I've seen that banner day after day here and I've been thinking about it. So thank you, Rachel.
Do it.
Wait.
Where did you see the banner? Because you're not on Facebook.
On my Audible app.
Oh, it's
yeah,
on Audible.
And I listen to a lot of Audible, so yeah, okay.
It's
popping up.
No,
there.
It's worth it, and it's free. So like you can't. It's win-win.
Yeah,
okay, I'm gonna get it.
Excellent.
I'm gonna look it up.
Yep. So and on to the meditation piece too. Like I think that I posted this morning on Facebook just to see how people react, because another piece to this Science of Wellbeing course is the indisputable data that points to the fact that social media makes people less happy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is, and it's not necessarily, I had a lot of people arguing on that post this morning, because the question I posed was, if you discovered that deleting all your social media would make you happier, would you do it? A lot of people argue the fact because they utilize it for work. And I get that it was not what it was about. It was about the happiness factor. And the reason being is like in today's world, there's a lot of people that are utilizing Facebook as a platform for political rants. There's a lot of people that are using Facebook for their own personal rants about what they're upset about. And a lot of misinformation being spread around. And when you I think, and I get a lot of joy out of some of the things I see, like there's some funny shit, but what really sucks your happiness is when you're kind of just scrolling through and comparing and looking at all this stuff, and it's a real time suck. And I think, and it's an addiction. So it was just interesting how people reacted to that post so far.
Yeah, there's a whole thing there. You know, I think it's one of Dave Asprey's things about you are who you spend your most time with. And
Oh my gosh, I'm alone.
If you're spending your time with people ranting, guess what?
Mm-hmm. But, well, and it's upsetting, you know, it's not a healthy, it's like I think Lady Gaga was the one that said that social media is like the cesspool of humanity.
It is so true. It is so true. That's why I'm so deep into it.
Keith, we have not talked about what you're doing to stay sexy. We started to talk about your hair and your intense need for a haircut.
What? So the question is, what am I doing to stay sexy? Well,
while you're staying inside.
Well, I focus on that every day anyway. So exercise a lot, as always. So 3 hours a day, 2 to 3 hours a day of exercise. Yeah. And then I can't go more than a day without a shave and a shower and like putting something decent on. So.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said about that. And I think, you know, there's a lot of jokes out there, again, back to social media of, okay, I am in my pajama bottoms, but I mean, I was running late, so everything else is done. But I find that if I stay in my workout clothes and not like get showered and dressed, I'm just not as productive. Yeah.
Well, there's something to be said about the routine, you know, and making yourself go. And people, I think right now, people right now are just so distracted by all the psychological impact of the isolation And the other thing I'm reading, I'm actually reading an article. I pulled up an article out of Psychology Today, and it's kind of interesting that there's this thing called terror management theory. And it says, when we're reminded of our own mortality, we subconsciously alter our attitudes and behaviors to help us cope with the terrifying prospect of our eventual death. And the biggest coping mechanisms, you know, are sex and, you know, arguing and a few other things. It's kind of interesting to see. And then this is going on to talk about the massive increase of traffic on the porn sites has happened over. And even to the point, and these guys are pushing against it, that 17 states have introduced legislation that increased porn watching is now a medical issue. So it's been interesting from the psychologist perspective, just to see how this terror management theory is affecting people.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up the imminent death thing, because I just finished listening to Ram Dass Becoming Nobody. Really interesting. And it's basically him doing a lot of his speeches. And he is a philosopher, and like he used to like run around with Timothy Leary and all that stuff. But he's just got these amazing theories. A lot of it that I listened to lately is really relevant, because he talks about attachment and clinging. And I think that's one thing that is making a lot of people miserable, that I've seemed to notice, is they're clinging to the idea of how it once was. They're clinging to the idea of how they think it should be. They're clinging to the idea of what they want it to be. And it's causing misery. And they're missing the opportunity to be with themselves, which is a scary prospect for people, and just be where they are and not worry about what's going to happen, and not be so concerned about trying to convince everyone around them that it should be this way or it shouldn't be this way or it's not fair or this and that, leading into the fact that really all of fear leads eventually back to the fact that we fear death. And so then what he finishes with, and he finished with this morning, was this whole, in the end of this book, that if we actually look at death as if it was taking off a tight-fitting shoe, because when you talk to the people about the philosophers who talk about moving to the higher plane of consciousness, that, you know, your spirit is more than your body, and your body is just this vessel that you're in right now. But it was such a fascinating phrase, like, what if death were just like taking off a tight-fitting shoe? And what if fearing death was a big waste of time, if you could just look at death as the next evolution of who you are, your spiritual growth? Really fascinating stuff. You got to be ready for the depth of it. But that's the thing, is like, people are fearing that coronavirus might kill them or their loved ones. And if they can come to terms with the fact of, if someone that you love does die, that doesn't necessarily mean it's just it's a whole different way of looking at the death and the loss of a person.
Yeah. You know, that's really interesting. There are people out there, and it's starting to, I think that's why your whole question about social media, like, I use it for business. But there are people out there that every day they're posting the death numbers. And I just want to go, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop the fuck up with it. Like, I'm ready to lash out. I feel my anger coming, that we're going to keep projecting the death numbers every day. I get it. It's a serious issue. And then I chime in. I'm like, let's talk about the death of business. Are we keeping track of that? Like, I get like so worked up over, we're just going to keep talking about there was another death today.
Well, I think Rachel has a great point. And I was talking about this with you know, my friend Candace yesterday, that it seems like our culture has two, she brought this up, our culture has two major areas that we don't know how to cope with: death and our own poop. And guess, you know, and look at how it's manifested itself. Why is toilet paper the one thing that is in short supply? Why? I mean, you know, of all things. But yeah, our culture doesn't really cope with death very well. And you can compare and contrast it with like Native American culture, where death was celebrated. You know, there's a mm-hmm. there's something called Tecumseh's Prayer, and it starts off with, "So live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart." You can be afraid of it, but it doesn't drive who you are. And our culture is just so death phobic, and it's just this thing, and we don't know how to deal with it. And you know, it's really, you know, and you bring up the numbers, and people are, you know, getting fixated on the numbers, and it's tragic. You know, every death is tragic, but the numbers pale in comparison to other things that go on in the world today. Last year, 835,000 people died of mosquito-borne disease. 835,000 people died last year of mosquito-borne disease. And that's low compared to numbers in prior years. And yet, who cares?
Let's go back to what you said about death. Every death is tragic. Now, hold on a sec. Let's reanalyze that, because none of us is getting out of here alive.
Right.
So is every death really tragic, or is it just really inevitable?
It's inevitable. So it's tragic to someone. It's tragic to someone. Right. It's right. Not necessarily tragic in and of itself, but it's tragic to someone.
I mean, I get there's tragic involved, like how you die. There's a tragedy there. It's tragic that there all of a sudden are deaths that maybe could have been avoided, but there's a lot of death. Like, why do we not have a cure for cancer? Why do we not, like, why do we have so many DUI deaths? Why are so many women dying because their husbands are beating them? There's a lot of tragic deaths mm-hmm. out there. This is not the only tragic
yes.
yeah. scenario. Yeah.
Well, and there's another piece to what this Ram Dass fellow was talking about. He starts out with in India, where when someone dies, or at the time when this was probably in the 70s, when he's doing these speeches, that it's not, your body's not put in a box and hidden away. They actually parade, they wrap the person in a white cloth and take them through the streets so everyone can see and appreciate death. Kind of like what you were saying, Keith, that it's not something to be upset about or fear or hide, because it's going to happen. And like to your point, Gina, sometimes it happens in ways that are tragic and can be avoided. But that there's a way that we can move people to the other side, some people would call it, and not do it in such a scary and painful way. And he addresses the topic of hospice and the lady that created hospice. And he says that she uses that exact phrase, every death is tragic. And, you know, hospice is great for making it more comfortable for people. But, you know, what if there was a system in place where people could be guided to the other side in a peaceful way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 But back to your point, death is inevitable.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. And it's interesting as we're talking about this and kind of got a little bit off the sexy topic, is that
from sex to death.
Well, they're actually tied together.
I don't ever, and maybe it changes as you get older. And I know I watched older people start to fixate on it, because they're getting closer to it and they're looking at their mortality. I'm never thinking about when I die. I'm never thinking about when that's going to happen. I live as if I will live forever. It never, ever crosses my mind to even think about it. So I think it's also a mindset. There's so many people fixated on these numbers when the reality is that we are all dying. Period.
The other side to it is, you know, I've actually been in more than one scenario where I was kind of worried I would die, you know, just being real, real, real sick in the hospital. And when Crohn's mm-hmm. first got me, I there was a time when I was like, I wonder if this is going to kill me. And then at that time, mm-hmm. I got really into Buddhism and was studying those kind of doctrines and teachings because I wanted to come to terms with this. And there was a real moment of awakening where I was like, you know what? It's all good. Like, it's okay. And I became really okay with somebody taking care of my child at the time because I realized she didn't really belong to me. She was like child of the universe. And just got to that point where something's going to take me, whether I get hit by a bus, whether I get sick, or whether I grow old and die naturally. It's going to take me. So the quicker that we can come to peace with that and just own how fucking sexy we are, the happier we might be.
There we are.
I just want to be sexy when I die. I mean, just somebody make sure I have red lipstick on.
Oh, okay? You will be. But you know,
and my negligee. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, you know, from a Zen perspective, there's a lady by the name of Charlotte Joko Beck. Are you familiar with her, Rachel?
No.
She has a quote that is, life always gives us exactly the teacher we need at every moment. Life always gives us exactly the teacher we need at every moment.
Love that.
And
love
you know, that. This is a great opportunity to be learning about yourself, learning what you like and don't like, you know, learning where the world can go. And you made the point, I think you made a great point earlier, Rachel, you know, hanging on to the expectation that things are going to go back to the way they were is silly. Things are going to be different.
Yeah. Let's do, as we get ready to wrap up, because we're at that point, we're actually beyond that point. Let's do a quick roundabout of something that we have learned about ourselves as a result of what we're going through with this pandemic. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. What I learned about myself is how all powerful I am. Because, you know, when we did the end of year show and the wrap up, we talked about, you know, mm-hmm. what was going to happen in 2020 and what it was.
Yes.
I want to slow Crazy. Down. It's like, whoa. Wow.
Yes.
I have to be careful about opening my mouth. No.
It's okay.
This is not new, but I have learned how much I miss or how much I enjoy traveling and experiencing new things. And it's really hard to find ways to experience new things, you know, within this sheltered, isolated life. And so that's just been reinforced that that's hard.
I agree with traveling. I do miss traveling. And I look forward to when I get to again, and I'm sure that I will appreciate it even more. Definitely what I have learned the most about myself is that I thrive on predictable routine. And what I love most about this quarantine, sheltering, whatever, is I've actually established a brand new routine that I like so much. Like literally each day is Groundhog Day for me. When I wake up, I get up at 6, I take the dog out, we go for our walk. It's usually like 3 or 4 miles together. Then I do my morning stuff, like study something good. And because I know I have the rest of the day, I don't feel that sort of urge like I used to check my email really quick to see what I need to do that I can get done. Like I don't, I go, I am not looking at that stupid email till 9 a.m. or 8:30 or whatever. I take care of me because I have a little bit more time to take care of me in the morning. And then I just work the rest of the day from home. And I actually am all powerful too, Keith, because for probably 2 years, and anybody who really knows me well knows, I will bitch a fucking blue streak about needing a driver because I hate to commute because I lose time in productivity. And now I don't drive anywhere. I have a full tank of gas that's been sitting there for like a week. And I love that. I love not having that drive. That commute.
Do you think you will, as a result of this, find ways to change that when we come out of this?
I hope I can continue it because, you know, my productivity levels as far as my work numbers are pretty freaking high since we started this. So ain't nobody going to be upset. But the thing about it is I don't have that, okay, I got to get Roxy to school and then I got to get to the office and then I got to get back down here to Polly's to get Roxy from school and get her over to dance and all these things where you have to be somewhere. Like it's all gone. It's just, which I love that.
We might want to do an episode on, and I think, Keith, this would be really great to get your insight on coming out of this, what will businesses do? Mm-hmm. And the reason why I bring this up is because I've been talking to different prospects and clients and making sales calls. And I talked to the HR director of a fairly large company yesterday to just kind of feel her out of what's going on. And she said, you know what companies are going to need? We're going to need consulting more than we're going to need training. We need to know how to get back to work. How do we go from this work from home to bringing people back, and are we bringing them back? So that could be a kind of an interesting, nothing is going to be the same, and the way we do business is going to change.
Yeah, that'd be a great topic. So. And I'm already working with a number of CEOs on how they're going to approach that.
Okay, good, good. So that'd be a good talking topic. What I've learned from this, speaking of the email, I really have like lightened up on like, I'm not checking email until I get to my computer. I'm like, I might look at it real fast on my phone, but I'm still not going to deal with it because I'm following different routines, same thing, setting up different routines to do. But what I think the biggest thing I've learned that I've already alluded to is that it's important for me to have people around me more so than I ever imagined. And because I was traveling so much before, and that really was what I was used to, that's why it's really hard for me to be so inside by myself. I've rediscovered a side of myself that either I was just not paying attention to or trying not to be. And this includes like one day Rachel posted something about a word that describes you. And I said, silly. And she said, that is the last word I ever expected to come out of your mouth was silly. And I'm like, well, I used to be really silly. And I lost the silly side of myself. And now I'm a little more silly. And I love having people around, and I love having people over, and I love cooking, and I'm way more domestic than I gave myself credit for, or I realized.
Wow. Hmm. So you were surprised you used the word silly. I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Well, the question was if there could be one word to describe
one word. To describe you.
Only one. And
the first word that came to mind for me was silly.
Wow.
Yeah. And what was interesting, even more interesting about that post is it was from a book that I was reading, of course, about how to brand yourself and how to describe yourself. And all these people are like, furious, fed up, pissed off. And I'm like, okay.
Let it go.
Yeah.
And I was like, silly.
Yeah. It was an interesting exercise for me. In different ways. And a lot of the stuff that I post on Facebook is because I want to see what people are, how they're going to react. It's not necessarily, it's not usually the same reason. So it's always fascinating.
Yeah. You know what? And I'll send you ladies a link to a really good YouTube that was done by Jim Collins here just a few days ago. You know, Jim Collins wrote Good to Great. And in it, he's talking about a gentleman by the name of Jim Stockdale. And Jim Stockdale wrote a number of books, but one of them was Life Inside the Hanoi Hilton, or Lessons from the Hanoi Hilton. Jim Stockdale was the senior ranking officer shot down over North Vietnam and put into the Hanoi Hilton, which was the North Vietnamese prisoner. And he was the senior officer. So he was basically responsible for all the Americans. He was there 8 years. He was brutalized. And he talks about it in his book, and Jim Collins does a great job of kind of paraphrasing some of the learnings from that. And, you know, what we're facing today is really minor compared to things like that or compared to what people have gone through in so many countries other than ours for quite a while in time and time again. So, you know, I think we're just so used to being so coddled and de-risked that privileged. Can't use risk. So it's hard for a lot of people to make that adjustment.
Can't live with my L'Oreal root touch up.
All right. We got to wrap this up because I got to get it back to work, people.
Okay.
We got monies to make because the government's not handing any out to us. So gots to go.
Okay, ladies.
It's been a fun episode going rogue with the two of you, as always. This is rogue, so I got nothing to say other than if you want to know more about me and this show, go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com and tell people to listen to our show. That's what I got.
True. You can find all our social media links and some cool free downloads, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
That's the best place to go. Nothing more than that.
You can find all of us at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. Thanks for listening to this rogue episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. Peace out, y'all.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof, monkey.